It's a parade, a festive atmosphere that brings the people together on Palm Sunday, like a victory parade, a championship where the whole city shows up. But after watching or listening to the Philadelphia sports teams, both of them, Sixers and Phillies, yesterday, it seems like it will be quite a while before we think about a championship parade around our town. So we'll settle in for the Palm Sunday story of Jesus this morning, where the people, the crowd, gathers to sing praise and loud hosannas to Jesus. This is a celebration. This story begins Holy Week with loud, triumphant energy. And maybe we, as a church and as God's people, can settle into the story and the stories of Holy Week, maybe, and escape the clamor and the fear-mongering of the world and politics around us this time of year, and to focus again on God's salvation and new life in Jesus. But the problem is that on Palm Sunday, all of the events of Jesus' last days on earth are political ones. There's a clash of kingdoms that happen here on Palm Sunday and throughout the week. We see dramatically the path of Jesus and this path of the cross in contrast to the path of the world and the clash of the sword. The way of humans is the way of violence and the sword. And these stories, and even here on Palm Sunday, we see that dramatized so clearly. These final stories of Jesus' life are the most political passages in the New Testament. And they invite us as well to find ourselves. Where are we in the story? And where do we identify? Who do we identify with? We stand in this middle ground, in the in-between space of Jesus and disciples and the crowds, and we try to find who we identify with. Of course, there's a lot of spiritual matters that are dealt with in these stories. And in the past, and even in the present, many Christian churches focus on the spiritual stuff. They isolate the spiritual material from kind of the political and the social path that Jesus takes. And there is a lot of talk we could talk about this morning about the sacrifice of Jesus for our sins and salvation, and keep all that Jesus has come to do on the inward, personal side of ourselves, and to talk about personal transformation and the offer that Jesus brings of forgiveness and new life and hope, and how Jesus changes our minds and our attitudes and our spirits. And all of this, of course, is true. But the story of Palm Sunday and the cross is a public story. It's a political story. It's Jesus living and demonstrating his faith publicly and his trust in God politically. It's an earthy story, an earthly experience that Jesus has, where the disciples and Jesus rub shoulders with the world around them, real people, the peasants and the politicians are all there. And the disciples get their hands dirty with the real stuff of the world. And oftentimes we see the disciples trying to be faithful and yet failing in their faithfulness, getting it wrong even as we ourselves get it wrong so often. The triumphal entry looks a bit like a political rally, a first century political rally, a military parade, a victory march. It's a public celebration. The community is gathered together, and in popular customs of the time, it was a victory for the army general to ride back into town on a nice horse and shiny chariots and to parade the military accomplishments that took place and to show off the new hardware of the military, the stealth bombers and the armored tanks and whatever else they might have paraded out there. But the Jesus parade is a little different than that. Jesus meanders along on this lowly donkey, a donkey. And yet, it's still a public parade. There's crowds of people, and they're singing this campaign song out of their own past. They're recalling the song of the Psalms. Blessed is the King, the one who comes in the name of the Lord, this King who's coming to restore the fortunes of Israel. So loud and grand is this celebration, this parade, that the Pharisees are worried that's going to get out of hand. And they come to Jesus and they say, quiet down your followers. There could be violence. These people could get out of control. They're unsettled by this groundswell of support from the masses rallying around Jesus. Would they seize control of the city or the temple or battle with some resistance? Tell your disciples to stop, the Pharisees cry out. Tell them to be quiet. It looks like a possible revolution, a violent overthrow. Jesus refuses to tell his disciples to stop singing. No, no, these free people need to shout and need to dance and need to sing their songs. If they were silenced, the rocks would cry out. But instead of going then into the city or into the temple, Jesus stops short in the very next story. After this triumphal entry, Jesus weeps over Jerusalem there at the city gates, lamenting the fact that they don't know the things that make for peace. No, there's violence on the part of everybody, in the hearts and in the minds and in the actions and in the thoughts and imaginations. They're thinking revolution, and Jesus weeps for a city that is missing the peace of God and missing this visit from God and missing the things that even make for peaceful existence. Some Bible scholars call what's happening on Palm Sunday like another parable of Jesus, except this time Jesus acts out the parable. Jesus lives the parable. Jesus demonstrates the parable. Of course, Jesus is king. Jesus rides into the political center of the earthly kingdom, Jerusalem, this victory parade. It's a climax of Jesus' popularity and his message of freedom and healing for the masses, his love for all humanity. And yet, we know from listening to Jesus throughout his ministry, he's a different kind of king, an alternative king of an alternative kingdom, a king that talks about mustard seeds and little beginnings, and this king that includes all people, outsiders and sinners, to come and eat and drink at his table. This king who calls followers to love their enemies and serve the least, and to be the last, and to take the last seat at the table. This is a king, but a different kind of king. And to some of us then who know the story, know that this isn't really even a victory parade. This is more like a death march, a funeral procession. Jesus going into the city where, because he refuses to fight back, will only mean one thing. So where do we find ourselves in this story, this strange day? Are we there with the masses singing, joyfully celebrating because, well, we too have tasted something of the goodness of Jesus and the goodness of God, and we have much to celebrate and to be happy for, and so we join in singing wonderfully rich praise songs even this morning because God has done marvelous things? Or can we identify with the leaders of the community, the Pharisees and the scribes, that want to put a clamp down on this revolution that might be getting out of hand? Restrain this unruly crowd. Use your inside voices, please. Keep the lid on this movement. Don't draw too much attention to yourselves, or things really could break out in violence. Or maybe... we find ourselves, like perhaps many, off to the side, just scratching our heads and wondering, what kind of a king is this? What kind of a parable, what kind of a procession is this that Jesus is doing? What's Jesus trying to say? What does Jesus mean? And what does it look like to follow this alternative king? A few days later, Jesus is arrested in the garden while he's praying, of all things. And the disciples in Luke 22 have the strangest response. Does it strike you as strange? They ask Jesus this question, Lord, should we strike with the sword? Really? And then, without waiting for an answer, they do. One of them does, takes his sword out and cuts off the ear of the high priest's slave. Now, if these are Jesus' disciples, shouldn't this surprise us a little bit that they even have to ask the question? Why are they so ready to fight? Why are they packing a sword in the first place? I mean, for 3 years they followed Jesus around. They've heard Jesus teach about love for enemies and his actions and attitudes of peacemaking and welcome to all people. And yet here they're still prepared to fight back. Maybe these disciples and, well, we ourselves kind of look a little bit alike. A little impulsive, maybe. Ready to lash out in anger or even just to defend one they loved in an act of self-defense. Of course, we know violence isn't the way of Jesus. It wasn't throughout his ministry, and it isn't here at the last week. And on Palm Sunday, Jesus chooses again this public way of the cross, going the way of the cross, becoming the least, stooping down, becoming empty, and allowing his life to be entrusted to the hands of God. In contrast to the way of the sword, Jesus pursues a way of the cross, of doing justice, of loving mercy, of caring for those around him, even the enemy, the healing, even at the last minute, the ear of the high priest slave. It's a strange way to be a king, isn't it? Doesn't look anything like politics today. Frankly, the Jesus movement might look popular on Palm Sunday, but most other times it looks pretty weak to be a king like that, or to even live that trusting of God that you would tell your followers to put their sword away. We choose sometimes to blame the crowd for being fickle and shallow, like one day they can say Hosanna, loud Hosanna, and then a few days later, crucify him, crucify him. But Jesus looks pretty weak as well, and not being able to defend himself here in these last days, ends up trusting God. What kind of an odd and foolish king is this? Dietrich Bonhoeffer writes, God lets God's own life be pushed out of this world and onto a cross. God lets God's own life be pushed out of this world and onto a cross. God's way is weak and powerless in this world, and that is precisely the only way in which God is with us and can save us. On Palm Sunday, the crowd seemed shallow in their praises and then later shouting, crucify him. But the Jesus way also seems very weak and foolish. Riding into this Jerusalem on a donkey, weeping over the violence of the world, and then renouncing armed resistance to his closest friends, these closest friends who are also caught in the middle and wondering, what does it really mean to follow this Jesus? Luke doesn't tell us who was the disciple that was wielding the sword and trying to defend Jesus at the last minute, but John does. John tells us it was Peter, the rock, the one upon whom Jesus said, I will build my church. It was Peter, maybe a stand-in for all of us. that said, somebody has to be responsible here. Somebody has to take matters into their own hands. It's his conventional wisdom to fight back, right? In today's world, sometimes you just have to resort to violence. Sometimes you just need a concealed weapon. Sometimes you just need to defend what is rightfully yours. Sometimes you need a military. Sometimes you need, well, you fill it in. It may not be the most faithful way to follow Jesus, but sometimes you have to do something. We debate these things, of course. And then there's Jesus. On par with God, one with God, instead of climbing up the ladder, climbs down. Put your sword away. No more of this, Jesus says. Instead of fighting back, offering healing, offering love, walking again the way of the cross. Here on Palm Sunday, it's God's prophetic political tradition on full display. Instead of that red carpet treatment of royal greatness and power defending the status quo, the God way rises up from the edges. It includes the masses. It brings together the fringes. It teaches in parables and rides on donkeys and uses ordinary coats to pave the way. And it speaks and challenges to the powerful. We wonder, did it do anything to change the violence in our world? Did it make a difference in even the way we relate to each other? In a world gone mad with violence, it's refreshing to see someone at least with the courage to stand up and say, stop, stop the terror. Put away your swords, put them back in this place, no more of this. Stop the bloodshed, stop the pain, stop the hurt. It's a bold political statement. After Jesus' final words, the disciples run away into the darkness. They all desert him, the story reminds us. After all, it's hard for any of us to live that pure, that true, that trusting of God's way that we would renounce ourselves of that urge to strike back. And so we find ourselves this day hopelessly caught in the middle, trying to find our own path and following Jesus in this way of the world's violence, the way of insecurity, the way of fear. How do we live when empires rage around us and Jesus, like a lamb before the slaughter, is silent? And yet we, with our anger and with our fear and resentment, our hearts run away even as Jesus runs to the cross. We see clearly the Jesus way, and we also struggle finding our own way in the midst of the Jesus way. Palm Sunday is a day we find ourselves in between in this path of Jesus to the cross. We sing and we weep. We lament over the violence of the world and people whose lives are tragically caught in the pain and the suffering around us. We want to shout for joy. We see the bitterness of confusion. And we know there's denial and betrayal as well in our hearts. We see the choices before us, and sometimes we just conclude, I'm just not there yet. I don't know if I can walk the Jesus way. I don't know if I can really trust God with my future and take this leap of faith and to boldly, trusting God, make a way in the future when I really don't know how it will turn out. We see both sides of the argument in these stories. Jesus comes publicly, politically into Jerusalem, choosing this lowly path of the cross, God's way and the way of the world mirrored back. And we too are called to that way of the cross. Pick up your cross, Jesus says, and follow me. We find that choice hard sometimes, reflecting the way of the cross in all human relations is 60 years ago, a Mennonite scholar, Guy Hirschberger, wrote a book, The Way of the Cross in Human Relations, destined to the dusty shelves now. But still, the gospel calls us to think about how the cross impacts all of the relationships and all of the choices and decisions I face in life. The Christian church has said from the beginning that the cross is how God wins. The cross is how God achieves victory and salvation and new life for God's people, for the world. In God we trust, we say it again. But will we, or run away, or fight back? Friends, that's our choice this week. Faithfulness to the way of Jesus means somehow finding our path in the midst of conventional wisdom and the God way. In the midst of cultural assumptions, we choose this path of Jesus, of nonviolence and forgiveness and love, that sometimes leaves us scratching our head, wondering, can I do it? Can I be that faithful to the God way? So friends, I invite you to find yourself in this story somewhere in between, maybe in between the praise of the crowds on Palm Sunday and the grief of our world and all that Good Friday brings. It's our turn now to find our own choice to the story, to give witness to God's grace and mercy and love that comes in Jesus, knowing that that way isn't always an easy way. It's a costly way. It may even sometime, God forbid, cost us our lives. And it may drive us to run away. We know, especially this week, that in the midst of Jesus' pure way, we will fall short. We will fail. Even in our best human efforts, we're naturally bent on the human way, the kingly path of power and retaliation and violence. But let's also remember the God way. The good news of the cross comes to us as a gift, a saving gift, a second chance, a third chance to follow Jesus again, to embrace the cross and to embrace the saving way and the salvation and new life that Jesus has come to bring us and to bring our world. May we together be thankful this week, friends, thankful for the gift of God's way in Jesus Christ.